welcome back to Senior Talk Radio. I'm your host for today, Rebecca Miller, and our co-host is Otto Loos. And we've been speaking with Marissa Licata, who is an outpatient dietitian. And right before break, we were just going to talk about skipping meals. Did everybody here have their breakfast?
Yes.
Yes.
Sam shaking her head. No. You want one of these little cuties here? So what did you have for breakfast? What did I have for breakfast? I actually had multi-grain toast with cheese, and I forgot to put my tomato on it. I think I even cut it on my counter, and I did not use it.
So now you're entitled to still have a tomato before the day.
I think
the
I have to have breakfast over again.
Yeah.
All right. So where we left off, we were talking about you had heard breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Yes, I heard that when I was young, very young. Of course, my father had a problem.
Breakfast is truly the most important meal of the day. And one of the reasons being is, if you think about it, you know, you have dinner in the evening, or maybe you have an even snack after that, but your body's in fasting mode while you're sleeping. So when you wake up in the morning, you really do want to start to recharge that battery and get the metabolism going. The only thing that really gets your metabolism going for the day is eating. So you want to come off that fast, so to speak, and really start to provide some nutrition to the body. So breakfast is absolutely the most important meal of the day. And studies also do show that those that are breakfast skippers tend to choose more poorly throughout the day, make poorer nutritional choices throughout the day.
Well, you figure if you ate dinner at 6 o'clock or 6:30 or somewhere thereabouts and you didn't have a snack, and now you go until 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock the next day before you eat again, you've gone through 12 to 18 hours without eating.
It's like the body's sort of on standby mode.
Yeah.
You know, you might not feel as sharp or perky as you really would if you actually put something in your body.
And then you shove it in. Within 3 or 4 hours, you shove a whole bunch of stuff
Correct.
In there.
Right.
And it just doesn't make sense.
Because at that point, you're so hungry, you don't care what you eat. You just need food. You've reached your point of you can't go anymore. You absolutely have to eat. So breakfast is, in fact, the
Very
most important meal of the day.
So no skipping meals. So you hear a lot of people have mini meals throughout the day.
Sure.
Some people are just focused on breakfast, lunch, and dinner and don't snack. I mean, I would think that it's really an individual kind of need, or really should everybody eat less but more times throughout the day, or are 3 meals enough?
You know, generally speaking, to a lot of people, we do recommend 5 or 6 mini meals a day. There's just a lot of benefit to that in terms of the metabolism. But having at least 3 meals a day is certainly a good starting point. And I always say, if you're truly not hungry, you don't have to have a snack. Many of my patients, I do, especially if someone's coming to me for weight loss, for example.
Right.
It's kind of sometimes they feel it's, well, you're telling me to eat more, you know, more times a day, where people think if I back off and I eat less, I'll be more successful. It's not the case. You have to have adequate nutrition for your body to do what it needs to do. So oftentimes I recommend people have in between meal snacks, small, you know, depending upon how many calories you're on a day, it could range from anywhere from 100 to 200 calories. You know, for that snack, because, you know, people say if I eat breakfast, then I'm hungry, say at like 10 o'clock in the morning. But that's natural. There's nothing wrong with that. That's your body digested the food and you're hungry again. It's appropriate.
Right.
So having a snack before you're waiting till 12, 1 o'clock for lunch is a good choice, to have something small and nourishing so you don't overdo it and overeat at lunch. Because sometimes if we overeat at a meal, you'll notice you're not hungry at the next one.
Right.
If you're not hungry at dinner, you probably ate too large of a meal or snack the time before.
Right.
So your body, you should be eating every 2 to 3 hours to stimulate your metabolism.
Just to go down a different track for a second, you mentioned your patients, all right? How would or when would somebody go to a dietitian or a nutritionist in general? You know, let's talk about, you know, we're talking about, I think a lot of people know what they're supposed to do in theory. You know, there's a lot written about it and a lot talked about it. But, you know, like you're a professional at what you do. When would you go to somebody such as you? Why would I go to a nutritionist?
Right. Very good question. So a registered dietitian can help someone with a variety of needs. It's not just weight loss. That's probably the first thing that people probably think of. Why would I need to see a dietitian? But you mentioned before, you know, your father had gastrointestinal issues.
He had cancer, basically.
Okay.
And it, the doctor told him part of it was because of his diet, the way he ate,
okay.
whether that was fact
so,
or not.
So any sort of a liver issue, a gastrointestinal issue, a dietitian can help with, whether it's irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, you know, gluten intolerance or celiac disease. I also see people for that they just suffer from, they might not have been diagnosed with something, but they're suffering from, you know, ongoing constipation. One might have food allergies that they're trying to figure out how do they balance their meals. If you're vegetarian, you need to maximize your mm-hmm. nutritional intake. I do see people with oncology patients and survivorship as well. I see women with, you know, maybe trying to be fit and healthy prior to pregnancy or during pregnancy, endocrine issues, if you have diabetes, or I have a lot of patients that are actually pre-diabetic. That warning sign came in, their hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of your blood sugar every 3 months. That you really sort of cannot get away from, that if that's an indication where your blood sugar has been creeping up and creeping up to prevent diabetes, I have a lot of people that come to me to say, okay, what do I do? What do I need to do to get back on track? But there's also dietitians that specialize in renal disease, kidney failure. So, you know, I see a lot of patients also with autoimmune disease, where diet really can impact, you can't cure the autoimmune disease with nutrition, but you certainly can minimize the symptoms that you're experiencing through proper diet. So there is a plethora of issues out there.
Do most of them come to you on their own volition, or are they referred usually by a doctor?
Like, I'd say sometimes 50-50. A lot of patients, you know, they've reached a point where they feel that they absolutely need help. They've tried to do some things on their own, maybe.
Right.
But also, too, a lot of times, you know, their physician, their primary care physician, maybe their cardiologist or their gastroenterologist might bring it to their attention that I have someone that I work with that I think they could really help you. And so they would refer that individual to a registered dietitian that they work with.
Would that be covered, like in the case we're dealing with seniors here, by Medicare or insurance?
Excellent, excellent question. So the limitations right now are not really, it's not great. So with Medicare will cover nutritional counseling, and what we refer to nutritional counseling when we're dealing with billing mm-hmm. is medical nutrition therapy. They only cover it for diabetes, so one would have to be diagnosed with diabetes, not at that pre-diabetic state. Kidney disease prior to dialysis or post liver transplant, if you know, within a certain amount of months. So Medicare only covers those three diagnoses right now for nutrition. Commercial, if someone has a separate commercial plan, it varies by plan greatly.
Right.
So
you
somebody
know,
has a real obesity problem.
It's very
really
limited.
They really want to do it without, you know, some other commercial method, and they wanted to go to a nutritionist, it wouldn't be covered by
most
insurance.
Likely, no. There are some obesity prevention programs that would be covered, but it's not where it needs to be. It's nowhere near it needs to be in terms
okay.
of coverage for folks. It's not.
I mean, that's a tough topic, and
yes.
we should really try to address that, and maybe we could talk a little bit later. You can give us some information how we can call our insurance companies and try to figure out how we can, you know, include nutritional counseling, because certainly it would be nice to have to, you know, to be able to talk to somebody before you get to the point
sure.
of obesity where you might need
it's
surgery.
It's preventative versus treatment.
One of the questions I had, I just wanted to throw in there
sure.
because, you know, it's a very hot topic, you know, especially raising kids. My kids are a little bit older now, but I have so many friends whose kids have such sensitivity. It
yes.
seems so much more now. And as I'm getting older, I'm becoming allergic to things like wine, for example, where
wine?
I've been able to.
Oh, that's not good.
I know. Well, I can always drink vodka. But,
I was gonna say, you're going to have to switch.
But no, but seriously, and, you know, there's so many different, and people will say, oh, well, you listen, allergic to the sulfites? Are you allergic to, I don't know what I'm allergic to. Every time I drink it, I get a reaction, so I don't drink it. But more importantly, really, is, you know, the peanut allergies and all the other, you know, you can have gluten. I mean, there's so many things. And you know, there's differences between allergies and intolerance and sensitivities. And so when you see patients, do you, are you seeing an increase? I'm curious. It seems like so many more people have food allergies. When we were growing up, it's like peanut butter and jelly on white bread. Everyone had it. I don't think
You don't eat that in public anymore. You're not allowed.
No, you can't eat it on a plane. You can't. You can't. You can't make any cupcakes for kids with it in it. You know, it's like so many restrictions. So, how has that impacted the nutrition industry? And how, you know.
Right. Well, we're certainly seeing a lot more children today, you know, in the pediatric realm with food allergies and food intolerances. And you're right, they are two very different things. And intolerance means you, you know, you have a a certain threshold. Like, say, some people you could have maybe, you know, a couple of ounces of milk and you're fine. But if you have a full glass of milk, you'll start to experience your symptoms. So it's like a threshold type of a thing. And there's no allergic response. With the true allergy, you have an autoimmune allergic response.
So
with
the
an intolerance, you're not going to get hives or things like
that. That's what I was going to ask you. So what's the difference? What would you see to somebody who has a lactose intolerance versus somebody who
allergy? That one's easy. You know, we could avoid milk. There's plenty of dairy.
No, I mean, how do you know the difference? Like,
plenty of tests. Like, so one would see an allergist or preferably an allergist, but you could also start with your primary care physician if you suspect something has changed. And they likely would refer you to an allergist where they would start to do maybe some skin prick tests or some blood tests to see what are you truly allergic to. But just because, you know, allergies can develop later in life. I mean, I have my own experiences with allergies. You know, I'm allergic to pineapple. I used to eat pineapple all the time. One time, that's it.
Right.
So something happens with our immune system where you know, it triggers that response.
Right. Well, I was going to say, how would one kind of know the difference between the intolerant, if am I lactose intolerant or am I allergic? Because there's different
symptoms.
Very
different symptoms. So an intolerance be more of like the abdominal cramping, the stomach pain, maybe running to the bathroom type of a thing, or the other way, constipation, where an allergic response are, they could be from minor, like a little, you know, some hives breaking out, to anaphylactic, where, you know, you might have a systemic body reaction. Sometimes people's, their lips swell, their tongues would swell. That is a true allergic reaction.
Right.
But it sounds like it would be a good thing in some cases to have a team.
30 seconds left.
Of a nutritionist and an allergist.
Sure.
Did I say that right? Yeah.
Yes. Well,
you know, could diagnose and work with.
Yes, that's
like
what we
do. Have, do you have that at
Yes, I work with people with food allergies and intolerances. Right. Okay. Intolerances are very common.
Marissa, thank you
much.
We're going to have to come. You're going to have you come back because this time went too fast. And we are going
to
be back shortly with our next segment, speaking with Antonio Petrish. Thank you so much, Marissa.
Thank you.